really think it's never going to go away. You're going to be tripping the rest of your life. Looks at me and he's like, have you guys been smoking weed? No, sir. It's like, where's the dope? We still don't know how much we've taken. Hey, man, like, how much did you give us? And he's like, that was a sheet of that was like $600 worth of you took all of it? I was born in San Diego, moved up to the Pacific Northwest here. Well, my buddy, he moved to Texas to be with his dad. And I flew down to San Antonio and we're going to go visit his grandparents. The drive to Kansas, I mean, it's so painfully boring. At least that stretch of road from San Antonio to Kansas, it is so flat and straight. Yeah, we got two speeding tickets on the way there. And I remember, yeah, smoking. We got pulled over once for speeding, got a ticket. My buddy was driving. The second time, we're listening to Led Zeppelin and Robert Plant. It was Dazed and Confused, and there's some wacky vocals. And I remember, like, getting into it and, like, pull over. I got to throw up. And we pulled over. He was like, I was about to pull you over, but you pulled over before I could put my lights on. Oddly enough, we were very calm and collected. Like, I don't know if it was because we'd already been pulled over, but I mean, it was Southern Highway Patrol. Chances are it smelled like and I remember being fairly messed up. And the cop, there was one on each side, and the cop even looks at me and he's like, have you guys been smoking? And I looked at it like, no, sir. And like, apparently that was good enough. And we're led on our way, and we went and had Thanksgiving, and we came back the next day, and we're going through Oklahoma City. I'll never forget, it was such a bullshit pullover, because we're like, we can't get another speeding ticket, got to play it safe. And the cop had already had someone else pulled over. And that guy was merging back in, and we didn't get out of his way quick enough or what, and the cop got us for failure to yield to an emergency vehicle. And, like, it was, you know, the third time, and asked my buddy to get out of the car, which I thought was weird. But, again, like, not sweating it. And I remember, like, yeah, what the hell, let's play it safe. I took my shoe off and stuffed it into the toe of the shoe. They're back there a while, and the cop comes to me, and it's like, where's the fucking dope? And like, oh, this isn't the routine I'm used to. Yeah, and I tried to play it off. Like, up in the Pacific Northwest, dope is like meth. So that, like, wait, what? And yeah, and he's like, yeah, where's the fucking dope? And I like, okie doke. Like, I pull off my shoe and gave it to him. My buddy apparently, like, rolled over immediately. He was just the cool kid, like, that... I mean, not to talk to big game, but some, I don't know. I thought it was odd that I held out a little longer than he did, but I wasn't, you know, the cop pulled him out of the car. Some serious denial, like, yeah, okay, well, we're going to get a ticket, I guess. He got me out, the cop, yeah, get out of the car, and puts me in the back. My buddy gets to be in the front car with his hands up front. I'm in the back, but we watch this cop just tear my buddy's car apart. And I remember there was these frozen blocks of catfish wrapped in foil. And the cop opens the trunk. And I, again, his eye, he's, you know, they look like kilos of whatever. And my buddy's like, oh, he's going to be so disappointed to find out those are just frozen blocks of catfish. Yeah, he ended up just leaving him in the car. And they sat in the sun for days. Gets back in the car. And then I believe, yeah, we witnessed the car being towed away. Or I think he took off, and we're still in denial. Like, this guy's...
Why did it get towed away?
Because we were being arrested.
A little bit of marijuana is enough to arrest everybody and take my car?
In Oklahoma, yeah, they could... Yeah, it's the most extreme state in the country. And I remember bringing up, like, oh, no, well, I have a plane. Because, you know, it was day after Thanksgiving, so Friday... I had a plane back to Seattle on Sunday. Like, oh, well, no. Like, sir, I have a plane to catch Sunday. So, you know. And he's like, no, it's Thanksgiving weekend. The judge won't be until Monday. Like, you're going to jail. And when you have your mugshot taken, it was this dark particle board with, I mean, well, My point of saying that is if you look up a picture of the Oklahoma City bomber, it's this part, you know, dark but dark board with the measurements drawn on with Sharpie. And years later, I totally forgot about it. And I watched the movie Bowling with Columbine. And I saw that mugshot for the first time. And I like, oh, my God. Like, I got this huge knot in my stomach. And like, holy shit, that's the, yeah, I guess that was. Because when we got there, it was a tiny, I mean, it's Oklahoma City. So I don't know if there was other wings, but the whole county, like it was four cells. And yeah, we had the same cell, at least according to the other guy that was in there with us. It's terrifying. And I had to, oh my God, like I had to call and tell my family, like, yeah, I'm missing my flight. Yeah, we were there till Monday, and we went and saw, oh God, yeah, we went and saw the judge, and that's when we got our paperwork, and we're looking at, oh, like, oh my God, they could keep you a year. Like, you couldn't do a year for any amount of marijuana, and I hadn't had a shower in a day, and my hair was long. I remember the first time seeing a mirror, you know, right before seeing the judge, and my hair was like, it was a ratty afro. The judge, you know, he said time served or whatnot, and he's this, you know, very southern judge, but I'll never forget, he called us up to the, he's like, you know, you guys come up here or approach the stand. And yeah, one in a million southern judges, but yeah, he's like, you know, I'm so sorry you had to spend any time here. It's a ridiculous law. This is probably the most trouble you'll ever be in, and, you know, hope I don't ever see you again. Secretary in the office ended up giving us a ride back to the impound lot, which the dickhead cop, and I guess they were saying, like, the cop that got you, nobody likes this guy. Yeah, he's just a total asshole. And that's, you know, people working at the courthouse. But yeah, the courthouse secretary, she gave us a ride back and got a Sonic burger after, you know, we'd been eating bologna sandwiches for 4 days. And yeah, it was wonderful. And I caught my flight home. Yeah, and that's the one time I went to jail. But going to college, and I there's a program at my community college to go to Wales for the summer with this amazing teacher who teaches like rock and roll history. And it was like a group of 30 of us go to Wales, and we stay in this town Aberystwyth. We went to the University of Wales in Aberystwyth and take field trips to cathedrals every week, and castles, and like in the middle of the week for class. And on weekends, you know, like it was literally from my bedroom, I could see Ireland across the way. And, you know, kids would take a ferry to Ireland. And me and these two girls went to Amsterdam. If there's no metal on you, then yeah, you can just bring whatever you want. And I think sometimes I would be a little more careful and like tape it to my leg, but we were going all over the place that summer. And I just went to Amsterdam, and I remember I bought a variety, you know, all the smoke shops, yeah, just a variety of weeds and different kinds of hashes. We were there for a weekend, and we came back, no problem. My big thought was I was going to take it home to my buddies, like, hey, here's weed and hash from Amsterdam. Flight there and back, no problem. From Amsterdam back to Wales and train ride. It's a red eye. It's like a 2-hour bus ride from Aberystwyth, Wales to London International. And I remember it was early in the morning, like some kids just stayed up. It was, so, you know, 4 a.m. And we're at the airport and standing in line for the metal detector. And it was such a long line, you know, you're kind of shutting your eyes while you're standing up. And I just remember looking up, and the person in front of me is going through the metal detector, and I'm like, oh my God, like, I haven't even done my metal check, make sure I don't have any metal on me. And I like really quick, like, okay, I'm good. And the guy's motioning me forward. I'll never forget, as literally mid stride, my hand grazes the pocket of my cargo shorts. and I feel this little, it was a metal like pill container, and it had, I bought it at one of the castles. It had like Celtic designs, but I had hash in it right through the metal detector. It goes off, and the guy, you know, doesn't think, all right, you know, empty your pockets. And I immediately, you know, wide awake, really slowly like taking stuff out of my pockets. And I have this, it's a bag with a bunch of little bags with all this weed and hash. And it's in the one pocket, and I take out the metal, like, oh, there's the culprit. That's what set off the alarm. Like, I can go through now. And, you know, checking my pockets and like, all right. And he like, no, like, need to empty that pocket. And he wasn't even paying attention. I just slowly take out this Ziploc with a ton of other Ziploc bags and a used glass pipe of all stupid things. But that's how I'd been flying the whole around all summer and never had a problem. And if there was so many bags and bags, you know, he looked at it. What is this? And I should have at least tried to get it. I don't know. And I'm like, it's exactly what you think it is, man. Yeah. And he like, all right, stay there. And so they saw me standing there, and I actually reconnected with a girl that was on my trip. And she actually mentioned that a few days ago, that she remembers me standing while they walked past, and they're kind of teasing me, but they didn't know what's going on. He was still like motioning people through. For a moment, I was like, I think he's forgotten about me. And I like, I think I could just like blend in with the crowd and walk away. And I reached for my thing, or it was sitting with my suitcase, and I went to pick it up and start walking. Yeah, he immediately, oh, no, stay right there. And yeah, he took me up to, he walked me across, and it was this customs or some sort of English police, whatever police, you know, would be in the airport. So customs. And it was these two old English guys, and they were kind of yucking it up and like opening the bag and smelling it and like, oh wow, this is really good. And you know, I'm terrified, like I'm going to London prison, like I'm trying to get, yeah, a Schedule One narcotic through an international airport, like it's done. Yeah, I'm gonna have to call my family, tell them I'm not coming home, like and they just had me stand there. And then they take me in this back room, and it was these two, like, these two girls, like, my age, you know, in uniform. And they come back, and they kind of, they reprimand me, but then they say, you know, because it's your first offense, you know, it won't be going on your record, and we'll let you go on your way. I asked, like, well, how do you know this hasn't happened before and it didn't go on my record then? I don't even remember what the response was, but yeah. But I remember getting myself, and I had to sprint across the airport to get to my flight on time. And yeah, I was just pale, and everyone else is joking, you know, happy to go back home. And I couldn't even tell anybody. I think, you know, it's a long flight, so at some point I told somebody. But yeah, Jesus Christ. In high school, I remember I'm a big Beatles fan. I got the Beatles anthology. And
are you still in high school?
In high school, yeah. I got the Beatles anthology, and there's a passage about where they first got, this Dennis dosed John Lennon and George Harrison with LSD, but like they kind of tell this glowing experience. And one of the quotes is, it was the most euphoric I ever felt, or it was the best feeling. I remember my buddy, and I read that, and he's like, holy shit, I didn't need to read that. And he's like, I think I can get some acid. And we had done mushrooms, and Anyways, he looked, and yeah, it LSD, it was gone. Like, you couldn't get it. And so for years, I would ask, and it was just something you couldn't, it was gone, because the precursor chemicals to make it, it didn't exist. Like, you couldn't get anymore. And my buddy's mom's boyfriend, like this deadhead, and I would ask him, and he has the same thing. It doesn't, he's like, I've done a lot of acid at a lot of Grateful Dead shows, but I've had good acid 4 times and you can tell the difference, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, years later, I'm about 29 and he gets a hold of me. He's like, I've actually found, not only have I found some acid, it is the best I've ever had. Which, you know, I'm definitely older. It's not something I'm searching out. I guess I inquired about it, but yeah, but just based on him, his recommendation, like, this is the real deal. Like, this is, I think he said something special. Like, I've never had anything like this. And me and my buddy, he would just give it to us. And it was a speck of paper, like maybe half as big as your pinky nail. And we took it and walked around, I think, yeah, and we like swam in the Puget Sound, and it was fun. And my 30th birthday was coming up, and we were gonna inner tube down the Green River, and it might have been my idea, but it got brought up, like, oh, you know, it'd be nice, like, to very mildly trip, like, while you float down the river. Like, I'm thinking like a lazy river, and like, okay. And so another buddy is gonna go, and they go to the mom's boyfriend and explain, you know, we're gonna go down to the Green River and we want some acid just for the three of us. Come back with a post-it note size. It looks like watercolor paper. Sorry. I mean, he just gave it to us. And so I assume he had some watercolor and he had liquid LSD, and he, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 hits, just cut, you know, okay. And our friend the night before, he cuts a quarter off, takes it. He's definitely tripping, but he drives home, like an hour long drive that night. Doesn't sit, you know, no problem. The next day, it's me, my two buddies, and my brother, who thank God didn't take any. And we split it 3 ways. And it was like a stick of gum, this humongous sized piece of paper. And it's immediately like, we're inflating the inner tubes, and my buddy, we get in the water, and maybe 10, 15 minutes later, my buddy Mikey he has his sunglasses on. He is like starfished, like on his inner tube, just not limp, but I mean, out of it. And we pull off to the side of the river, you know, you're going down river. And I think we had a joint, you know, and he kind of stands up. He's like, I don't know if I can do this. And my other buddy like looks at him and, well, what exactly does that mean? And I bring up, like, yeah, not only physically do we have to float down the river, we can't go back up, like, but right. We've taken this, like, this is happening both mentally and physically. We have to do this. And at that point, I remember looking at the grass, and the grass was starting to do that. And I like, yeah, like, we should get going. And so we start floating, and I've learned, cause I've, you know, with mushrooms and stuff, it helps to embrace it. Like, if you start getting scared, that's bad. And it can amplify. So I was really embracing it, and very quickly the trees, like they would sway, but they would fractal, and then they would snap back up. Somehow my two buddies and my brother floated up because there were shallow parts in the river, and immediately my buddy Mikey, he was immediately out of it. So like they tied him to my other friend's inner tube so they couldn't get separated. And then my brother was just on his own. And yeah, I remember it really kicking in and getting separated and looking around, and like there's no one I recognize. And there's shallow parts of the river where you should just stand up and carry your inner tube a little further down. But I was quickly so out of it, I remember laying there and there was people on the bank like barbecuing, and I'm looking at it and I'm trying to judge distance and like trying to figure out if I'm moving or not. And I mean, it felt like I was there a while, and you know, there's some slight paranoia.
Were you stuck on the ground?
Well, it was very shallow water, but yeah. And I think so. I think it was so shallow I wasn't moving. And I just remember like, you know, scooting myself along until I finally kind of got moving, because I could have stood up, but I didn't want people to know I was high. Like, I'll walk weird so they'll know I'm high. So I got to play it cool and just scoot myself along the shallow area of the river rocks. I mean, it seemed like an eternity on this river. I remember thinking like, I'm gonna live here on this river, I guess. And that's another thing about psychedelics. There's a natural feeling about it where the few times I've had too much, you really think something has been triggered in your brain. It's never gonna go away. Like, that's, you're gonna be tripping the rest of your life, and you're gonna have to be in a mental institute. And this is how people go crazy. I remember thinking like, they'll have to forward my mail to the river, I guess. I mean, cause I'm gonna live here on the banks of these rivers. I'm never getting off this river. And then of course, you know, I start thinking about like, I wonder, is this the part of the Green River where the bodies were buried, you know, from the Green River Killer? They figure out I'm not with him at some point, and they stop on the side and wait for me. And I mean, just the rush of euphoria, you know, to be reconnected. I'm not lost with them. And my brother, he hadn't taken any, thank God. And he's trying to quiz me like, oh, wow, you know, what's it like? And I can barely talk. I'm trying to explain it, but it's so much. And like the tree, I remember it had a vivid rainbow outlining all the trees. There were rapids in parts of the river, and I remember thinking like, if I fall, like I don't know if I have the motor skills to swim. I remember splashing water in my face, and I couldn't tell if I was wet. I was so tripping so hard. But we go down these rapids. I pushed off of a rock or something. I remember cutting myself. And that's when it got really real. And I like, you know, Jesus Christ, even at 30 years old, like I can still be so stupid as to decide to, yeah, take LSD and go floating down the river and, you know, hurt myself. My one friend, he's taken as much as us, totally fine, drives home, no problem. And my brother didn't know he was going to have to be driving us back. You know, we're an hour away. He has no idea how to get there, how to get back. He's never really driven out of our hometown. It was right when Google Maps had just started, where you could like put an address in Google Maps.
Right.
And I'm trying, like, he's asking for directions, and the buddy, Chris, who actually watches this podcast, he's giving directions, and my brother is completely, you know, frustrated and flustered and very prone to show his emotions, get pissed off really quick. But for our sake, he knew we were really, really out of it. He kept it really cool for us, and I knew he was losing his shit, just frustrated and getting, he got more and more lost. He finally got on the freeway, and I remember passing the Tacoma Dome and like, oh my God, okay, Alex, you know, Alex, you know where we're at. There's the Tacoma Dome. You know how to get us home. Literally minutes later, we're sitting at a stoplight, and I'm like, dude, what the hell happened, man? Like, we're on the freeway. We're almost, yeah, we still have to go over the narrows. And he just freaks out. Like, I don't know. I took the exit and we're at the stop. And we get over the narrows bridge. And that's when we all kind of were able to relax. And I just remember getting home and just putting on dry clothes was the most euphoric thing, getting out of these wet clothes. And that's when we're kind of able to, you know, we're home safe. And for psychedelics, that feeling of safeness is everything. So we're able to relax a little and enjoy it. We still don't know how much we've taken. I was bouncing the story off with my buddy because usually it's he and I. And he brought up, we had a roommate. This guy hadn't been home in weeks. Like, we forgot he even lived there, really. And we are tripping out of our heads. We're the only ones home. And we hear doors unlocking. And remember my buddy and I, we look at each other like, what the hell's going on? What's that? Who is that? And we hear this guy, this other roommate. And I hear his voice and some chick. And my buddy, it's his house. And he's like, I forgot that guy even lived here. Like, Jesus Christ, this is a hell of a time to show up. And they show up, and this guy, he was tweaking. Like, we didn't realize, but he had, at some point, I think we knew he had been into meth at some point. Like, we went to high school with him, but he had gotten, I don't know, clean, but he had stopped. He shows up with this chick, and they're tweaking, and the psychedelics, like, I've always noticed when I watch movies on psychedelics, you can tell when they have makeup. You're like, oh my God, the makeup is caked on their faces. Like, you just see certain things much more clear or accurate, or, you know, like, I remember watching Star Wars, and I thought, oh, won't this be fun watching Star Wars on psychedelics? And it was the exact opposite. Everything looked so fake. You're like, oh my God, that look, you can look, it's obviously a costume. Like, you can kind of see past a lot of stuff. And like, Jesus Christ, they caked the makeup on. Like, looks like she's wearing a mask. Anyways, this guy and his girlfriend show up and they are twitchy. And I remember they looked like they were dying. Like, they looked so pale and unhealthy and like these little, yeah. And my buddy and I, you know, we're just looking at each other and like, holy shit, man, this guy does not look healthy at all. Both equally looked very sick. I remember standing in the backyard and it was like a cartoon. Like, so the next day we got some sleep and we call the mom's boyfriend. Hey man, like, how much did you give us? And he's like, well, I gave you enough for the summer. And we're like, no, we took what you gave us. It's like, well, yeah, we asked for enough for my birthday to go down the Green River for four hits. He's like, that was a sheet of acid. That was like $600 worth of LSD. You took all of it? That was enough to last you the entire summer. And that, like, that's ridiculous. Even that, like, nobody would take a whole sheet of acid throughout a whole summer. But yeah, he was being really generous and he gave us a ton. And yeah, so we had split a sheet of acid. Our buddy took a quarter the night before. And then the next day we split the rest three ways. So it's 25 hits of acid we each
right.
took. And yeah, but it was also a bit of a testament just to how pure it was or how clean was. I mean, it was a good experience. If it was anywhere near that amount of mushrooms, yeah, it would have been nightmare. But yeah, it was definitely a glowing experience. And actually, I've thought about this so many times. Like, how is that there that loss of communication? Like, we ask for enough for, we ask for one hit for each of us, and you give us 100?
Right.
And I very recently realized, I think my buddy Chris, he knew it was a sheet of acid. I think he has a natural affinity for it, a natural tolerance. Because again, he took a quarter, 25 hits the night before, was great. He drove home like a few hours later. So I think he was trying to, in his mind, ensure we had a glowing experience the next day. And I mean,
sound like it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a fun story to tell. I wouldn't want to redo it, and certainly not while going down the Green River. They're starting to do research now and even decriminalize mushrooms in some places. Mushrooms, I've always thought, are a lot more spiritual. It always freaks me out when people say that, oh, they took mushrooms and went to a party or a concert. Like, because that's happened to me. It was a horrible experience. But yeah, just a little more spiritual, something you want to do with a close friend. But I want to say, I thought it was your podcast. A guy brought up Ibogaine, which is, it saved my life. It, because I had a pretty rampant painkiller opiate problem. Again, I sort of touched on earlier. I mean, I was so naive. I remember hearing about OxyContin and how people got addicted to it. And they just said it was a painkiller. But in my head, a painkiller was like Tylenol. Like, how do people get addicted to Tylenol? Or, you know, how would anyone get addicted to painkillers? But it's this stuff, and it's actually illegal here, but it's a tree bark from a plant in South America, and it's this, you take it, and you trip hard for 24 hours, but afterwards, yeah, you're physically clean of opiate withdrawals. And, And I try to, not that I really run into anybody with opiate problems anymore, but I try to get the word out there. And if you look, you can get it online. It's expensive, but.
Hey, I appreciate you guys watching. If you like the video, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell so you get notified of videos just like this. Leave me a comment in the comment section. I really appreciate you checking out the video. See ya.